I'm delighted now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Leslie Gallery Dilworth. Her new book is called Luck is Not a Plan for Your Future, and she will be talking about it tonight at 6 o'clock at Collected Works Bookstore here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much. It's really fun to be here since I listened to you in the morning.
Oh, thank you. It's interesting, the life you've had. This is a book about design. You were trained as an architect.
Yes.
As you say, you have rarely built a house except for your own. But design is a metaphor for how we live our lives.
Exactly. What I'm saying here is that in this book, Luck is Not a Plan for Your Future, that you can design your life. You can use the same principles as a designer uses to design an environment or a building or whatever the project is. You can use those same principles and same approach to design your life.
And, you know, I was thinking about this when I was reading the book. We had some weeks ago, a couple of months ago actually, some writers on the air, and they were talking about the question of whether they outline their books before they write them. And one of them said, you know, some writers are more like architects and some writers are more like gardeners. The gardeners plant something here and then they decide that they need more shade and they plant it somewhere else, whereas the architects figure out what they want, they have to figure out, make a plan in advance and then build it. And when you decide that you're going to live your life like you are an architect, live your life like an architect and design, how do you balance that on the one hand, planning, and on the other hand, letting things come to you and changing your plan as life shows you new paths?
I guess you're talking a little bit about spontaneity. In my life in particular, I have never taken the direct route, like the turnpike. I've gone more in the scenic route. So it's not necessarily that the shortest, best way to get from here to there is a straight line. Sometimes you find out what it is you want to do by diverting from the path. But for me, everything that I've done has been within this framework of seeing the world as an architect. Now, in terms of what you've asked about the element of spontaneity versus strict planning, if you're an architect, just like in your life, you have a general idea of where you're going and what you want, but you have to be open to possibilities. And in fact, there's a part in my book that is devoted to coincidences, because I'm a firm believer in coincidence.
It's funny, though, most of the coincidences that you describe, not all of them, are, I mean, for example, somebody has a photograph on the wall behind them, and you recognize that this is from a garden in Italy that you happen to know, and that led to wonderful things. Yes, that's a coincidence that you knew it. On the other hand, you also knew 700 other things, so you probably would have recognized a lot of different photographs because you were so passionate about this particular thing, about architecture and design.
Well, there are a number of lessons in that story. The story actually ends in my teaching this program with Prince Charles at his school that he developed. But the lessons for all of us are that coincidence comes about when you're curious. Curious in that case was looking around the room, not just sitting there like a blog, talking to the person, finding out more about them, chatting, and identifying that particular photograph was a very hard photograph to identify. So it was a very abstract photograph. And then I think courage to talk to people and find out, genuinely, to find out about them.
What you ended up doing, the series of organizations that you worked with and the kind of career path that you chose, was not only about architecture and design, but very much about organizational development, building institutions, working with nonprofits, and so on. That is a whole different skill set in a way, or is it, from what you learned as an architect and a designer?
That's a very good question. I think that it is a different skill set, but it's really designing in the sense of understanding how to put together an entity, whether it's a building, a city, a community, or your life. There are really a lot of similarities. And in organizational management, it's gathering consensus about what that organization could be, the possibility of what it could be, rather than its limitations. Particularly in nonprofits, they often focus on their limitations rather than their possibilities.
Well, one thing is you found that you really enjoyed going into failing or struggling nonprofits and saying, let's not cut back and think smaller. Sometimes what you need to do when you're on the edge of failure is to actually do more programs and think bigger.
Absolutely. And if you believe in your organization and you believe in its purpose, then I think it's much easier to do fundraising. I especially like to do fundraising because I never think of it as fundraising. And I don't think of it as development. I don't think of it with horror. I think that if we have a great idea that's going to be good for the community or good for our environment, that why wouldn't people want to be involved in it and be part of it? So I'm giving you that opportunity.
Right. So you give people an opportunity to get involved with something that is extremely important and valuable, and the money rolls in.
I wouldn't say it rolls in, but it does come.
We're talking to Leslie Gallery Dilworth about her book, Luck is Not a Plan for Your Future. Another piece of it which I thought was interesting was you make a distinction between life balance, which a lot of us talk about and think about, which is how to balance your work with your family. You instead use the term integration. What's that mean? What's the difference?
Well, there's a big difference. Now, it's very popular to talk about balance. And when they talk about balance, they always talk about life plus work or work plus life. Well, the fact of the matter is that life is your work and your family or your personal interests. And that's life. It's not life plus family or life plus work. And balance, to me, is really a word that doesn't work for anyone, because balance is like when you're in high school. You have a 45-minute period here, a 45-minute period there, a 45-minute period there, and that's balance. But life doesn't work out that way. Sometimes your children need you more. Sometimes your work needs you more. Sometimes your partner needs you more. And sometimes you need yourself. That isn't balance. It's integration. And I think for not just women, but men, because it's a family issue, really need to understand how to integrate all aspects of their life.
And speaking to that, it's very important for women in particular to choose partners who are going to do the work in the home and support, and you know, both of them supporting each other's careers.
Yes. Most women that I've talked to who have careers, when I ask them, what was the most important choice that you made, they say the choice of their spouse, their partner. And it's absolutely true.
I wonder if men say the same thing.
They might say it in a different way. But women say it in a way that refers to their career.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this ongoing imbalance of there are a lot of women who want to support their husbands, but very few husbands who want to do that same kind of work that involves grocery shopping, bill paying, and child care for their wives.
It's changing so much.
Is it?
And I think it's changed a great deal. The world's a very different place than it was 35 years ago or 40 years ago. Now, more men are involved in taking care of their children. I used to joke 35 years ago that the only way that both work and families are going to become more integrated is when more men get joint custody of the children when they get divorced, if they get divorced, because then they have to completely readjust their schedules. And I've seen that happen with friends of mine who have had careers where they travel all over the world and then they've gotten divorced. Maybe it's a result of all the travel, but then they have to completely reshape their travel schedule.
It's a very interesting and a longer conversation about men and women, and one of the choices you made was not going into the kind of architectural firm where you would have to work evenings and weekends and give your whole life to the firm and otherwise be not be considered a team player because you had these two little boys.
That's a point which really is, in a broader sense, choosing your stress. And most people don't realize that you can choose your stress. It's not to lead a stressless life, because everything has some level of stress. For instance, for me, if I were in an office doing the same routine every single day, that would be really stressful to me. So I chose not to be in that environment. I also chose, when I was going back to work when my second son was 6 months old, I really wanted to be a real architect, that is, designing skyscrapers. That's what I always thought I would do. But I thought about the reality of what it was like then to work in an architecture office that was doing that work at that level. And I knew that since there would be no other women in the office, that there would be really a low level of tolerance for what they would think were sacrifices that I would be making so that I could also be with my children. So when I talk to women in careers, I advise them that the most important thing is to know what your priority is. I'm not putting any value judgment on establishing your priority, but if your priority clearly is your children, then all the decisions you make are in reference to that. So, for instance, I worked every other week, unlimited hours, and the alternate weeks, I worked from 10 to 3. And that was that could not be violated. Everyone I worked with knew that. Never make an appointment for me that would last past 3 o'clock or before 10. But the alternate weeks, if you wanted to see me at 7 a.m. or you wanted to see me at 7 p.m., that was great.
Another thing that I found fascinating in the book was you took on a project in Philadelphia, which at the time that you took it on had really poor signage, so you'd be driving along the road and you'd end up not where you wanted to be because the street signs were so bad. And I'd never really thought about street signs. I mean, it seems sort of, to the layman, it seems like you just put up a street sign. How hard can it be? Well, it turns out it's really hard to put up good street signs that let people not get lost in a big, crazy city. But in order to do that, you had to bring so many people together, including bureaucrats, naysayers, stick-in-the-muds, designers, engineers, and all these kinds of people, get buy-in from everybody, and then it works. But that's like, I mean, it seems like you were kind of figuring that out as you went along.
I didn't know anything about signs. what I knew is that I kept getting lost. And what I knew that was so outrageous, which really brought it to a head, was when my husband and I were coming back from Spain, and we'd been driving around Spain for 2 weeks and never got lost. And on our way from the airport to our house, a drive we had done hundreds of times, we were following the news signs on the interstate, and we wound up on this little road that wasn't the road to our house, with a big barbed wire fence that said, in a very unfriendly way, "No entry. Stop. City of Philadelphia dump." And I just got furious. I thought, how could I have driven around Spain for 2 weeks and never get lost? And here I am, within half an hour of getting back to my hometown, and I get lost. What does that mean to visitors, to people who don't speak English? And so I just assumed that anyone in a powerful position in the city would certainly want to change that. But it turned out no one wanted to change it because it wasn't anyone's priority. And then, after I asked the mayor, and after I asked the head of the streets department, and after I asked the head of PennDOT, the Pennsylvania Highway, I ran into the head of a major foundation, philanthropic foundation, and I was explaining to him in frustration what had happened. And he said, "Well, Leslie, if you wanted to make real change happen, fundamental change, change that would last for many years, what would you do?" And I said, "Well, I have to think about that because I don't know offhand." And then I went away and I thought about it, and I remembered a lecture that I had had in architecture school 15 years earlier, where the professor had said that sometimes the situation is such a mess that you can't just tweak it anymore. Because if you tweak one part, then the other part bulges out. And what you have to do is to look at the whole situation as though it's not even there, it doesn't exist, and design what is the ideal. And then look at where you are and what the steps are required to get to that ideal, which I then call the modified ideal, the doable ideal. And that's exactly the plan that I proposed to this foundation president. And I asked him for $980,000 for a 3-year plan that did not include the cost of the signs. And much to my absolute shock, I thought this would just be a starting point for discussion. But he looked at it in front of me and he said, "Fine, we will fund this." And when I walked out of the office, I was really scared.
He's like, "Oh crap, now I got to do this."
Exactly. And of course, no one really thought that it would be possible. But we built this incredible constituency for change. And we built it in a way that was fun for everyone to do.
Well, and there are things that are so kind of strategic and funny at the same time, which is you have some event that all these city people have to show up at because the president of a major bank is there and is hosting it, and nobody wants to refuse an invitation from that guy, and therefore everybody shows up. And the person who's the least likely to ever lift a finger, you put in charge of the committee or the this whatever. And I mean, it's just a kind of this process, that kind of process, and it applies, I think, to so many different types of organizations, nonprofit, for-profit, becomes a kind of art in itself of making this dance happen.
That's really interesting the way you put it, because it is really thinking about what all aspects are. For instance, in that particular program, my name did not appear anywhere, but I asked the head of the streets department to be on the panel so that he would have to sit there the whole time, because I knew that he wouldn't even come, let alone if he came, he would walk out, you know, after 5 or 10 minutes. And lo and behold, at the end of that panel, he went up to one of the panelists and made arrangements to go see them, to visit their city, to see how they were doing what they were doing.
Lots of interesting stories. I mean, this book, which is in a way a book of advice for others, is very much a story of your own life. And those stories, I think, have a lot of lessons for those of us who are, well, you know, all of us out here in the working world trying to work with others and make things work and have the lives we want to have.
I appreciate your saying that. And I'd just like to share with you how this title of the book came about, Luck is Not a Plan for Your Future. It's because over the years, people have constantly said to me how lucky I am. Lucky that I live in Santa Fe while my office was in Washington, D.C. Lucky that I was working with people I really enjoyed being with instead of people you don't want to see every day. Lucky that I could organize my schedule so that I could really be with my children when I needed to be and have that kind of flexibility. And finally, one architect from a major international firm was telling me how lucky I was that I could organize my schedule this way, and he couldn't. And I finally got very annoyed, and I said to him, it is not luck, it's by design.
And when you say that to an architect, they probably hear it. Leslie Gallery Dilworth is author of the book, Luck is Not a Plan for Your Future. She will be speaking tonight at Collected Works Bookstore at 6 in the evening. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much. This was really a lot of fun to talk to you.